Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
New reporting on former President Trump's reaction to seeing his supporters storm the Capitol on January 6th. With congressional investigators digging in, the question is, did he really brag about the size of that crowd? Plus, vaccination mandates get outlawed in Texas. Governor Greg Abbott has issued an executive order blocking vaccine requirements, including for private businesses. The question is, how will the Biden administration respond? And Paul McCartney sets the record straight about why the Beatles broke up. Now, more than 50 years later, the question is, what really happened to the Fab Four? It's way too early for this. Good morning, and welcome to Way Too Early, the show that's prepping for a hard day's night. I'm Jonathan Lemire on this Tuesday, October 12th. We'll start with the news. Almost a year after America elected Joe Biden to lead the country out of the COVID-19 pandemic, the 46th president may have hit a wall. Following what many called a mishandled withdrawal from Afghanistan, troubling scenes at the southern border, and a Delta variant surge, the president's approval rating has tumbled from the low 50s in February to just the high 30s in a recent Quinnipiac poll. In focus groups from swing states critical to Biden's win last year, strategists are reporting a common trend to Politico. The outlet writes in part, quote, "Reports from leading party operatives all point to Biden needing to get a handle on the virus to claw his way out of the muddle." In a focus group last week, Pennsylvania Democrats, one after another, articulated the issues vexing top White House aides, party operatives in Virginia, and voters in Georgia. Why isn't President Joe Biden's diminished job rating rebounding? All nine participants from Tuesday's session gave Biden a C-minus grade or lower, and their answers circled back to a similar point. The pandemic and the many ways it continues to hinder normal life is souring their views on Biden. To be clear, many of the setbacks with the pandemic stem from the unvaccinated, a group that largely exists in communities won by Donald Trump in 2020 and now led by Republican governors. President Biden has attempted to counter these souring views by promoting his $3.5 trillion Build Back Better plan and his the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill. But even if Congress were able to push through the president's agenda, one strategist tells Politico this: passing both bills won't be enough to significantly improve Biden's standing without Democrats first establishing they are the party responsible for defeating COVID. House lawmakers, meanwhile, are back in Washington today to approve legislation that would lift the nation's borrowing limit. The Senate voted on a short-term debt ceiling extension last week. 11 Republicans broke ranks and voted with Democrats to overcome a filibuster. The House is expected to approve the measure quickly so President Biden can sign it into law this week. Congress will have to revisit the issue in December. Joining us now to kick things off, co-founder of Punch Bowl News, Jake Sherman. He's an MSNBC political contributor. Jake, thanks so much for being here. Good morning. Let's start with that polling. There's this poll and others, perhaps not quite as troubling, but not too far off, that show President Biden's approval rating has really fallen in the last month or two. What's your reporting tell you about inside and outside of the administration, Democrats on Capitol Hill, those who work so closely with the White House? Are they pushing the panic button? What's your reporting telling you about the administration and its approach to the pandemic? Do they think that is indeed the key to turn these numbers around?
Yeah, of course, John, and congratulations on your Red Sox. We're happy that Kyle Schwarber, a Washington National for about 5 minutes, was a contributing factor. But listen, I would say the following. It should be of no surprise to anybody that a pandemic, which has lingered for now almost 18 months or however long it's been, is going to sink a president's approval ratings. There's no question about that. There's also we are a long way away from the last big piece of legislation, which was the American Rescue Plan that Congress passed earlier this year, that people have forgotten about that. So we have to see if Congress passes this Build Back Better agenda, the infrastructure package and the social spending package, if that's enough to help Joe Biden rebound his approval ratings. One theory of the case is sometime next year, people will have forgotten about COVID. They will at least theoretically, like this new agenda that the president has passed, and he'll rebound. But the reality is, John, Democrats are, according to history, going to lose the House of Representatives. So that is something that I think Democrats are wrestling with, and at least the honest ones are cognizant of.
So, Jay, we're going to talk about the debt ceiling in a second, but let's go back to the Biden agenda. I mean, you follow this as closely as anyone, the workings on Capitol Hill. What sort of timeline are we looking at now? How is this going to play out over the next few weeks? Is it going to be months? How are they? What do you think?
I think it's going to be months. I think it's going to be a November, December story. I think we're halfway through October and don't have the basic building blocks to get this done this month. And I think that the House is coming back in today for one day and then is leaving for another week. So I think that tells you all that you need to know. But yes, I think this will be a November, December year-end situation, which is kind of what we've been saying all along.
And just tell us this, Jake, now that the debt ceiling has, is going to be addressed, do we think that that will be part of the reconciliation? When we have to deal with this again in December, is that going to be part of the reconciliation bill? What's their approach going to be?
Yeah, it should be, according to a lot of Democrats, because that's the easiest way to do it without having to involve Mitch McConnell. But Democrats have said they don't want to do that. And we report this morning in our upcoming edition that there are people who believe that the debt ceiling will last until mid-December or early January. So that would be a kind of a horse of a different color, so to speak, when I would imagine that it would all get wrapped up together in December no matter what, but at least there would be some breathing room come the end of the year.
Jake Sherman of Punch Bowl News. The Red Sox fans, we are very appreciative of Kyle Schwarber. And thank you for being here today and come back soon. With an executive order, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is prohibiting any entity, including private businesses, from imposing COVID-19 vaccination requirements on employees or customers. In a tweet, Abbott writes, quote, "The COVID-19 vaccine is safe, effective, and our best defense against the virus, but should always remain voluntary and never forced." In the order, the Republican governor rebuked the Biden administration for, in his words, bullying many private entities into imposing COVID-19 vaccine mandates or requiring vaccine passports. Abbott added the item to a legislative special session to have the measure codified into law. He also issued executive orders over the summer banning local governments and school districts from requiring either masks or vaccinations, issuing $1,000 fines to those who fail to comply. In the fight against COVID-19, drug maker Merck is officially seeking emergency use authorization for a pill to prevent COVID hospitalizations and death. The new medication is being called a game changer by experts. It's the first of its kind and could soon be made available to high-risk people who contract the virus. NBC News correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the latest.
Now officially seeking emergency use authorization from the FDA, if granted, Merck's first-of-its-kind antiviral pill to treat COVID could be prescribed to Americans by the end of this year, with the company saying its pill cuts hospitalizations and deaths in half for unvaccinated patients with early symptoms. The five-day regimen of 40 pills costs an estimated $700 a patient, similar to Tamiflu in that it's taken at home during the early onset of symptoms. The prescribed pill would be for adults with mild to moderate cases of COVID at high risk for severe disease or hospitalization.
While this is excellent news, it's still 50%. So that means a lot of people who do get infected are still going to get very sick with COVID-19. So it's not a miracle.
If authorized, Merck's milestone would be a game changer, but not a substitute for vaccinations. The U.S. government has ordered enough pills for 1.7 million Americans, but 67 million who are eligible have yet to be vaccinated. Still, there are signs of progress on the front lines. New infections are down 53%. Daily deaths and hospitalizations are also dropping.
I think we really can start to spike the football as we emerge into the spring, but we should stay vigilant until then, continue with the precautions we have so we do not have any risk of a fifth surge.
Amid more signs of normalcy, like the Boston Marathon, authorities have also said it's safe for most children to trick-or-treat this Halloween. More steps forward in a pandemic that has offered so many setbacks.
Still ahead. After a weekend of major disruptions, Southwest Airlines canceled even more flights yesterday. The latest on that travel nightmare. Plus, James Bond returns to theaters, but the box office is shaken, not stirred, by Daniel Craig's final film in the franchise. Those stories and a check on the weather when we come right back.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The California Department of Justice is now investigating last week's massive oil spill off the coast of Huntington Beach. A pipeline ruptured and spewed thousands of gallons of crude oil into the Pacific Ocean, forcing beaches to close. The state attorney general called the spill an environmental disaster with far-reaching consequences for wildlife, the community, and the economy. Huntington Beach reopened yesterday after tests found no detectable amounts of oil toxins in the water. The attorney general said they are working to assess whether the emergency could have been prevented. Chaos for Southwest after the airline canceled and delayed well over 1,000 flights this weekend, leaving passengers stranded. The disruptions have continued into the start of the week. NBC News correspondent Sam Brock has the latest.
A full-fledged travel nightmare.
We've been worrying about it for the past 24 hours.
That's now at the end of day four.
I was definitely hoping that my flight wasn't getting canceled because I got to get back for work.
More than 40% of all Southwest flights delayed or canceled, impacting tens of thousands of passengers. Over the weekend at Denver's airport, the backup spilling onto the second floor. Similar scenes across the country from Reno to Nashville and Dallas.
They canceled twice. They canceled.
Southwest apologized to customers, saying the numerous cancellations were primarily created by weather and other external constraints, which left aircraft and crews out of pre-planned positions. The FAA pushing back on an earlier suggestion that air traffic control staffing was contributing to the problem, saying no air traffic staffing shortages have been reported since Friday. Industry experts believe there are likely several contributing factors.
Is it possible that some members of Southwest and its pilots decided to sit this out because of the COVID vaccine?
There's definitely something aside from just ATC and weather delays going on here. The unions have said no. The pilots are saying no. But the timing is strange.
The head of Southwest Pilot Association responded to speculation that the airline's recent vaccine mandate is contributing to the chaos.
How do you know that is not related to what's just happened the last 4 days?
Because our sick rates are right in line with where they were this summer. So it is absolutely completely false to say that our pilots are that this is affecting the pilots in any way. The two are completely mutually exclusive.
Mandates right now at the state and federal levels are creating tension. In Seattle, the police department has until October 18th to comply with hundreds of officers still unvaccinated.
They're using bully tactics to force their employees to get this. And that's what's led to this disconnect.
Still ahead, you've been waiting for it. Major League Baseball's postseason is heating up with a scrappy underdog Boston Red Sox becoming the first team to move on to the League Championship Series. Sports, just a minute.
Hey, this is Jeff Lewis from Radio Andy. Live and uncensored, catch me talking with my friends about my latest obsessions, relationship issues, and bodily ailments. With that kind of drama that seems to follow me, you never know what's going to happen.
You can listen to Jeff Lewis Live at home or anywhere you are. Download the SiriusXM app for over 425 channels of ad-free music, sports, entertainment, and more. Subscribe now and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
On an 0-1 pitch, Hernandez lifts one to left center field. It is pulled in by Meadows. Here comes Santana. The Red Sox on to the championship series.
There we go. Kike Hernandez delivers Boston's second straight walk-off win, driving in the deciding run on a sac fly in the ninth to send the Old Town team to the American League Championship Series with a 6-5 victory over the 100-win Tampa Bay Rays. Rafael Devers is a bad, bad man. Hit a three-run homer to spark a five-run third that put Boston in front 5-0 before Tampa battled back, tied in the eighth, and gave me a heart attack. The Red Sox take game four for their first set of back-to-back walk-off playoff wins since a little series you might remember as the 2004 ALCS against the New York Yankees. Boston will face the winner of the other ALDS matchup between the Astros and White Sox. Those teams get an extra day of rest with yesterday's game four in Chicago postponed because of rain and rescheduled. That'll be this afternoon now. Houston leads that series 2-1. To Los Angeles, where the San Francisco Giants take the edge in their National League Division Series against the Dodgers. San Francisco's Evan Longoria helps put the defending champs on the brink of elimination, powering the Giants to a 1-0 win with a solo home run on the fifth. Dodgers ace Max Scherzer gave a brilliant performance on the mound, but received no support from the LA offense. Game four of the best of five series is tonight at Dodger Stadium. And in Atlanta, Jock Peterson lifts the Braves to a 3-0 victory over the Brewers in the other NLDS matchup, launching a pinch-hit three-run homer in the fifth, Jocktober, they say. That put Atlanta one win away from a second straight trip to the NLCS. Turning now to the finale of Week 5 in the NFL, and the Ravens hosting the Colts on Monday Night Football. In Baltimore, the Ravens traded by as many as 19 points in the game and appeared to be down for the count after quarterback Lamar Jackson fumbled near the goal line in the third quarter. But after that costly turnover, the Ravens scored a touchdown on each of their final four possessions, Jackson racking up a career-high 442 passing yards and four touchdowns while accounting for 499 of Baltimore's 523 total yards of the night. That's extraordinary. Baltimore comes back to beat Indianapolis 31-25 in overtime. Great game, though my attention was obviously on the baseball, Bill Karens. What does the forecast look like today? Give us a sense of the weather across the country.
Yeah, well, we are watching a lot of dramatic weather, severe weather over the weekend in numerous spots. And in the East Coast, it's felt like September since October began, to say the least. And this week is going to be no different. All our attention is going to be in the middle of the country this week, and also on our first significant winter storm that's heading into areas of the West. So the ski lovers are, they're like, all right, bring it on. It's about time. This is on schedule, too. And this first snowstorm is going to be mostly in the Northern Rockies. This one will not be in Denver. I think they still have a chance for some snow towards the end of this week, but a lot of the heavier snows are going to be in areas of Wyoming and Montana, a little bit there in Utah too. So mostly the areas that you'd expect will be getting the heavier snows there. So Casper up to Sheridan, you have the best chance of getting up to a foot of snow. Billings, it looks like a little less for you, maybe around 3 to 6 inches. And then tonight, as this storm heads into the plains, it's that time of year. We do get a severe weather season in the fall. It's shorter than the spring, but we did have some significant tornadoes over the weekend. We do think we're going to get some large hail and isolated tornadoes later on tonight in areas of Kansas and also Oklahoma. About 5 million people at risk. And this will be a late evening event through the overnight hours. So in Oklahoma City and Wichita, Kansas, most people will be asleep when these storms roll through. We're also expecting a lot of heavy rain in areas from Dallas southwards towards San Antonio and Del Rio. So we could have some localized flooding. But the story also is these warm temperatures. I mean, it was pretty warm for the Boston Marathon. It was very warm for the Chicago Marathon this past weekend. 71 today in Chicago, also 71 in Boston, still mid-70s in D.C., and the humidity is a little high still in the southeast. And it's not like it changes tomorrow. D.C. will be around 80 degrees, Boston and New York at 75. I mean, Jonathan, it's getting to the point that everyone on the East Coast, we kind of forget what it's supposed to be like. this time of year. We're supposed to have those chilly nights, and but I'm still picking tomatoes in my garden. It's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, it's too warm, Bill. I'm a fan of fall. It's my favorite season. I'm ready for those cooler, crisper temperatures. Certainly the idea of humidity at this point, no thanks. But thank you, though, for the forecast. Still ahead, we're learning new details about what former President Trump was doing on January 6th while insurrectionists stormed the Capitol. We'll dig into that new reporting. But before we go to break, we want to know, why are you awake? Email your reasons to waytooearly@msnbc.com or tweet me at John Lemire. Use the hashtag waytooearly. We'll read our favorite answers later in the show. Welcome back to Way Too Early. It's coming up on 5:30 on the East Coast, 2:30 out West. You're up late. I'm Jonathan Lemire. We're learning new details about what was happening behind the scenes in the White House on January 6th. In his new book, Betrayal, the Final Act of the Trump Show, ABC News chief Washington correspondent Jonathan Carl describes how then-President Trump remained out of sight, watching television in the White House private dining room while insurrectionists stormed the U.S. Capitol. Carl reports House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy called Trump, asking him to tell the rioters to leave. McCarthy reportedly said, quote, "I just got evacuated from the Capitol. There were shots fired right off the House floor. You need to make this stop." According to Carl's sources, the former president, he liked what he saw. He boasted about the size of the crowd and argued with aides who wanted him to tell his supporters to stop rioting. Trump finally acquiesced 2 hours after the riot started. He posted a video on Twitter asking his supporters to go home, but also praised them. According to Carl, an aide who was there during the recording of the video said the message had to be taped several times. In earlier versions, Trump neglected to tell his supporters to leave the Capitol. A Capitol Hill police whistleblower is coming forward with a scathing letter accusing the leadership of mishandling intelligence and not properly responding to the January 6th riot. NBC News correspondent Hallie Jackson has that story.
New fallout from an explosive letter written by an anonymous former Capitol police officer describing top department officials as responsible for the single greatest intelligence failure in the history of the U.S. Capitol Police, calling out senior leaders Yogananda Pittman and Sean Gallagher specifically. Quote, "What I observed was them mostly sitting there, blankly looking at the TV screens showing real-time footage of others." A law enforcement source tells NBC News the two leaders were focused on the evacuation of congressional leadership. Pittman with Lester back in April.
Every day I think about the well-being of the officers.
Capitol Police say although there's more work to do, many of the problems described in the letter have been addressed and that they're committed to learning from prior mistakes.
It's all the more reason that we need to continue to see an aggressive January 6th bipartisan commission pursue the ground truth of what happened that day.
It comes as the former president, rallying in Iowa this weekend, hints at another run.
We're using the same slogan, make America great again.
And clings to the lie that triggered that insurrection, that the election was stolen, even though it was not.
I never conceded, never.
But state after state where the election was close conducted audits to check the vote totals. Georgia even counted three times, with all of it confirming again that Joe Biden won. Still, demonstrating Mr. Trump's hold on his party, this new dodge from a top GOP leader.
So you think the election was stolen?
What I said is there are states that didn't follow their legislatively set rules.
Do you think the election was stolen? Yeah.
And it's not just irregular. It's states that did not follow the laws set, which the Constitution says they're supposed to follow.
Our thanks to Hallie Jackson. And joining us now, MSNBC political analyst Juanita Tolliver. Juanita, good morning. Great to see you. We have known for some time that President Trump obviously didn't react with much haste to tell his supporters to stop rioting at the Capitol that day. And we now have some new details in Jonathan Carl's book. But these allegations from the Capitol Police whistleblower, that is brand new. How significant do you think they are as the nation still comes to grips with what happened that day and as the Select Committee moves forward with this investigation?
Look, I think the whistleblower has come through with some critical, damaging information about Capitol Police, because not only was it about misuse of intelligence that Capitol Police officials had before that detailed how bad things could get on January 6th, but it's also the potential of the chief potentially lying to Congress that in their testimony, that is another big weight that I think the Select Committee absolutely is going to have to take up and add on top of all of their other investigations surrounding the attack. Because you're right, Jonathan, the America is still coming to terms with this, but 60% of the country recognizes this as a terrorist attack. And it's also not only about getting to the truth, but making sure this never happens again. So when Capitol Police says they've addressed these issues already, they need to detail explicitly how to the Select Committee to make sure that this never happens again.
And on January 6th in that Select Committee, the Biden administration is sort of broken with precedent here, and they're not going to honor President Trump's request for executive privilege in terms of documents related to that insurrection, which could lead to interesting consequences down the road. But the White House has framed this as saying, look, January 6th, that's a singular event. We have to get to the bottom of it. We're not going to defer to what he wanted. What's your sense, though, as to how President Trump and his allies are going to respond to this White House's decision?
Look, they're going to fight tooth and nail just like they fought every other subpoena. Think back to the first impeachment trial that Trump faced and witnesses fighting that. And that's going to be the same playbook they're using, right? Trump knows that his allies are going to listen to him. That's why you have Steve Bannon refusing to cooperate at this point. And you can expect those court battles, I think, that are going to potentially delay the Select Committee. But what I appreciate about the Select Committee is that Chairman Thompson has made it explicitly clear that he's going to use every tool available to him, including criminal and civil contempt of Congress, in order to make sure that these witnesses are compelled to cooperate. Because this is not something that can be dismissed. This is something that the American public not only deserves the truth of, but the sanctity of our institutions require it in order to continue to stand strong. And so I fully expect the Select Committee to keep probing here. I also want to just name that the White House is doing this under the guise that they recognize that January 6th was not only unprecedented, but it was extremely damaging to our country. And the quote was, it is in the best interest of the U.S. to make sure that these documents come out. And so the White House counsel told the National Archives to do what you need to do to make sure that this gets out to the public. Because when this reporting about the book shows that Trump sat back and watched this attack on TV for hours and did nothing, got the calls from Republicans and did nothing, and then had to record multiple messages in which, like, he finally told the insurrectionists that he loved them. Right. Like, this is all critical in getting more intel, more information about who was talking to Trump. What was he doing, and why was he waiting and watching this attack?
So, Juanita, we talked earlier in the show about a poll that showed President Biden's numbers go down. There have been a few of those recently. But I want to actually get your take on a different poll that we've been talking, that's also been going around this week, about how the American public doesn't really seem to know what's in the Biden agenda. Then there's some real complaints inside and outside of the White House. A suggestion, there's a recognition they haven't done a great job selling it, telling people, hey, what's in it? Family, paid family leave, childcare, things that Americans like. And when they're polled independently, people approve of. What's your sense? I think there is a belief, no done deal, but the Democrats will get this done. Maybe it's weeks or months ahead, but they'll get this done. How, though, will the Biden administration be able to sell this to the American people and give his party the political win it needs going into the midterms?
Look, I think that's absolutely right, Jonathan, that Democrats are confident they will get this across the finish line. And that's why we see Biden already out in public talking about the tangible impacts, right? He was in Michigan talking about the benefits of paid family leave, talking about the benefits of childcare, because we know that that resonates, right? I feel like Democrats were so confident coming into this effort because they ran on this platform in 2020. And so they took it a little bit for granted that the public knew it was in it since they voted for it. And so now it's just a reminder, hey, remind people of how you are tangibly impacting their lives, which is, let's be real, a mandate of this Democratic-controlled White House and Congress, so that people can feel that transition, feel how you're fighting for them, and then take that energy into the polls. So this is a critical public education exercise that I think the White House is going to lean into. We've already heard Democrats talking about it differently, enumerating all the benefits, emphasizing not only the personal effects they've seen that they will see in their own lives, but that constituents will see as well. And so that's what Democrats are going to continue to do in the weeks, not only as they work to negotiate this, but after it passes in the lead up to midterms as well as 2024.
Yeah, it's going to take a far more aggressive sales campaign. The White House is aware of that. Juanita Tolliver, thank you so much for being here this morning. And still ahead, the totally different fuel source powering Prince Charles's ride. Look, there it is. Way too early. Back in a minute.
The Boston Marathon was held today. It's the only marathon that starts with someone yelling, "Cops are here!"
Time now for something totally different. Seth Meyers, New England. Runners everywhere are celebrating the successful return of the Boston Marathon after it was twice delayed due to the pandemic. Taking place on Indigenous Peoples Day, the 125th race around the city was smaller than usual, with 18,000 in-person athletes, while some 30,000 runners participated virtually. Two runners from Kenya came in first for both the men's and women's race. Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, was among the year's most recognizable amateur runners. As the first Native American cabinet secretary, Haaland said she ran as a tribute to Indigenous people. Even James Bond isn't immune to the hardships imposed by the COVID-19 pandemic. In the latest installment in the Bond series, No Time to Die, it had a modest opening weekend, raking in $56 million domestically. While that was in line with MGM's expectations, the movie lagged behind other franchise premieres. The film was delayed over a year by the pandemic, and research shows Americans are still hesitant to go to a theater as the virus continues. Internationally, the film had a more robust opening, earning $257 million. But it's not just 007 driving an Aston Martin. Prince Charles announced that his car now runs on white wine and cheese? Delicious! The prince said in an interview with the BBC that he had the engineers reconfigure his car's fuel source to bioethanol made from wine and whey from cheese back in 2008. He has been driving that car, gifted to him by Queen Elizabeth on his 21st birthday, for over 50 years. But he wanted to make it more environmentally friendly. He says it not only runs better, but smells great too. Meanwhile, Paul McCartney is setting the record straight on the infamous Beatles breakup. In a newly released snippet of an interview with the BBC, the singer says John Lennon instigated the split. He said in part, quote, "John walked into a room one day and said, 'I am leaving the Beatles.' And then we were all left to pick up the pieces." McCartney explained that Lennon wanted to make a new life with Yoko Ono and called that time the most difficult period of his life. According to McCartney, the Beatles' new manager at the time, Alan Klein, wanted time to tie up loose ends, prompting public confusion around the band's split. McCartney ended up suing his bandmates in order to keep their music out of Klein's hands. The full interview will be broadcast on BBC Radio on October 23rd. Still ahead, fallout over revelations of a step-by-step plan using loopholes to overturn the presidential election. Way Too Early will be right back. The conservative think tank, the Claremont Institute, is defending its employee, attorney John Eastman, after it was revealed he allegedly provided step-by-step instructions on how he believed then-President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence could overturn the 2020 election. The group released a statement yesterday defending Eastman and slamming media reports. Quote, "Claremont Institute senior fellow John Eastman, acting as counsel to the President of the United States at a critical stage during the 2020 elections in December 2020 and January 2021, offered legal advice that has since been maliciously misrepresented and distorted by major media outlets." Contrary to almost universally false news accounts, which have done great damage, John did not ask the vice president, who was presiding over the joint session of Congress where electoral votes were to be counted on January 6th, to, quote, overturn the election or to decide the validity of electoral votes. John advised the vice president to accede to requests from state legislators to pause the proceedings of the joint session of Congress for 7 to 10 days to give time to the state legislatures to assess whether the acknowledged illegal conduct by their state election officials had affected the results of the election. Okay. But the Washington Post writes, the defense is among the most carefully worded straw man arguments in modern political history. Essentially, the statement isn't disputing that Eastman provided a ready-made procedure for Trump and Pence to get the election overturned. He clearly and unambiguously did so. It's that he didn't explicitly say Pence should overturn it himself. Joining us now, national correspondent at Politico, Betsy Woodruff Swan. Betsy, welcome to the show. You've been following this closely, I know. What's the reaction been surrounding, you know, this has all come to light in the last couple of weeks, some really good reporting about this memo and Eastman's plan. What have you been hearing in terms of the reaction to Eastman's scheme and that defense that we just read provided by the organization that employs him?
There's, of course, a ton of interest on the Select Committee in the legal side of how President Trump and his allies tried to find a way to overturn the results of the January 6th election. We've gotten lots and lots of pieces of that particular puzzle in the recent months. And in fact, it's one of perhaps the narrative threads of January 6th that we have the most visibility into, in large part because so much of what happened in those conversations is put down in writing. In addition to Eastman's memo, we have Jeffrey Clark's memo. Clark, of course, was a Trump-allied senior DOJ official who proposed sending out misinformation to multiple states claiming that the FBI had found evidence of voter fraud when it hadn't. That memo he proposed sending, we've got in writing. It's now become a public document. We also have notes that a different senior DOJ official took during a phone call with Trump, where Trump talked about his efforts to try to reverse the election results in very shocking terms. So it makes sense, of course, that now Eastman's employer is trying to defend him with this argument that's deeply unpersuasive, and that Eastman has become sort of a consistent piece of conversations regarding what happened on January 6th. This particular thread stands in sharp contrast to many of the other pieces that were moving that day. We have much less information about the organization of the Stop the Steal rallies, about the content of the phone calls between lawmakers and President Trump during the January 6th attack, and about what exactly was going on at the Defense Department. So it just highlights the extent to which we have so much more to learn about how this played out.
Yeah, and Trump has said, of course, that he'll invoke executive privilege in the Capitol riot probe, while some key players, his top aides, say they'll defy subpoenas. What happens next? What measures do the committee have to compel, perhaps, them to testify? What are the next steps here? How do you see this all playing out?
What might happen next for Trump if he follows through on his threats is he could sue and ask a federal judge to block the National Archives from turning over documents that the Biden administration says the archives can give to Congress. That lawsuit would be tough. It would be a heavy lift for a former president to try to persuade a judge to override a current president regarding executive privilege. But Trump has signaled he's going to bring it. We're keeping an eye out to see if that lawsuit comes in the next week or two. As far as this question of witnesses who have yet to appear before the committee to testify, this week is the deadline for those four former Trump administration officials to testify to the Select Committee. If that deadline passes without their testimony, then the Select Committee gets to think about what type of enforcement mechanisms, to use a technical term, they might be able to use. Of course, they could sue, but that would take a really long time. It could take years. What they've talked about more that would be a little spicier is the idea of trying to use criminal charges to pressure these men into testifying. The House could put together what's called a criminal referral, basically an argument that these men have broken the law. Again, if they don't testify, the deadline's this week. If they don't testify, the deadline passes, the House can send that criminal referral to the Justice Department, and DOJ could then decide whether or not to charge these men with contempt of Congress. Contempt of Congress is a big deal. Comes with a prison sentence of up to a year, with fines of up to $100,000. That's the kind of thing that can be highly motivating, even to people who are closely allied with Trump. So we're keeping a close eye, probably in the next 2 weeks, to figure out how much the committee actually does to really twist arms and get these folks to answer their questions.
Politico's Betsy Woodruff Swan, thank you so much for that explanation. I know you'll be staying on the story. Come back soon. Earlier in the show, we asked all of you, why are you awake? Susan writes, I'm up way too early because I'm taking the LSAT this morning. Good luck. I hope that goes well. That's no joke. Maya is up way too early to tweet this photo. More of the peak fall foliage in our region of the Adirondacks yesterday. That is gorgeous. And Jeffrey emails that he was up early to catch Bill Caron's forecast, writing, I'm up early because this landlocked Oklahoman is headed to the beach for a week of sun, sand, and ocean breeze. You know, little known fact, about 80% of our tweets and emails are about Bill Caron's, his forecast, and his ties. Up next, a look at the Axios One Big Thing. And coming up on Morning Joe, we'll hear from a member of the Select Committee tasked with investigating the attack on the Capitol, House Intel Chairman Adam Schiff. Plus, Virginia Democratic gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe will join the conversation. Morning Joe, just a few minutes away.
Spend-
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.